On this week in Enterprise Tech, we have Mr. Brian Chee, Mr. Cruz Franklin back on the show today. We haven't talked about ship ports around the world before. Tons of freight coming in now. An interesting angle there is just how vulnerable they are to cyber attacks. Almost sounds like a premise for a movie. We'll talk about it. Plus, we have an interesting tech talk with our guest today, Brian Bowers, SVP of Solutions Delivery at TeamViewer and co-founder of Upskill. Now, we discuss wearable technology that can connect your workers to all the things they need to do to enhance their jobs. Definitely shouldn't miss it. Quiet on the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWIT.
This is TWIT, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 511, recorded September 16th, 2022. Augment your customer's reality. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by UserWay.org. UserWay is the world's number one accessibility solution and is committed to enabling the fundamental human right of digital accessibility for everyone. When you're ready to make your site compliant, deciding which solution to use is an easy choice to make. Go to UserWay.org/TWIT for 30% off UserWay's AI-powered accessibility solution. And by Melissa. Poor data quality can cost organizations an average of $15 million each year. Make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. And by IRL, an original podcast from Mozilla. IRL is a show for people who build AI and people who develop tech policies. Hosted by Bridget Todd, this season of IRL looks at AI in real life. Search for IRL in your podcast player. Welcome to TWIT, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world's connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide through this big world of the enterprise. But I can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in the professionals, the experts, starting with our very own net architect at Sky Fiber, network expert, security professional, 3D connoisseur. He's all around tech geek. He's Mr. Brian Chee. Brian, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. And I'm actually getting ready to go and visit some geeks over at Cape Canaveral starting next week. Ought to be a lot of fun. I desperately want to go and see some of the artwork done by Mr. Michael Okuda, who has been designing mission patches for NASA for quite a while. And I'd like to see the big placards they have in the main cafeteria, if they'll let me.
It's the way to get you to get in there. That's a public display there. So good job. Fantastic. Well, enjoy your time there. Hopefully you're bringing a camera.
Oh, yeah.
Phone. I guess a phone with a camera.
We'll see what they let me take in, but if they will, I will be shooting lots of pictures. I might actually go and take my good Canon for this one and try and get some great shots of the Rocket Garden, which ought to be a lot of fun.
Right, right. Looking forward to it. Well, thanks for being here, Brian. Well, we also have to thank and welcome our senior analyst at IMDIA and our security enterprise expert. He's Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, how are you, my friend, this week? What's been keeping you busy?
Oh, doing reasonably well, Lou, and working on a lot of stuff for a number of different clients, always looking at cybersecurity awareness training, starting to look at some issues around risk quantification and management, and looking ahead a little bit to issues around professional certification training. So plenty to think about, plenty to learn about, and plenty to let folks know about on social media and over at Dark Reading.
Speaking about plenty to talk about, we have a lot to talk about in the enterprise security space this week, so we should get started. We haven't talked about ship ports before around the world, but they're finally back in business at the pre-pandemic levels, and tons of freight's coming in. One of the interesting angles there is the fact that the longer that they're docked, the more vulnerable they are to cyber attacks. So we're going to talk a little bit about just what's going on there. It sounds like a premise to a movie. Now, plus we have a really interesting tech talk today with our guest. Today we have Brian Ballard. He's SVP of Solutions Delivery at TeamViewer and co-founder Upskill. And he's going to talk about wearable technology and how you can connect your workers to all the things they need to do to enhance their job. So lots of really exciting and interesting stuff to talk about later. So stick around. But before we do, we have to jump into this week's news blips. Now, I'm going to take a guess and say that a lot of you out there use the open source network tool PuTTY for secure shell and telnet. Really super useful tool. Unfortunately, nowadays, the more useful a tool is, the bigger target it has on its back for hackers. Now, according to Ars Technica article, researchers believe hackers from North Korea have been pushing a Trojanized version of the PuTTY utility to the backdoor, to actually backdoor your network and your organization to spy on you. Now, researchers from security firm Mandiant reported that at least one customer it serves had an employee who installed the fake utility by accident. The accident caused the employer to become infected with a backdoor tracked by researchers that goes by the name of AirDry V2. Now, the file was transmitted by a group Mandiant tracks as UNC 4034. Now, there are several overlaps between that group and a threat clusters that have North Korean nexus. Now, you might be asking, how did the person get the infected version? Well, the threat actors posed as people recruiting the employee for a job at Amazon. They then sent a target message over WhatsApp that transmitted a file named amazonassessment.iso. The image also had an executable file called putty.exe. Everyone knows that file. Now, the executable file installed the latest version of AirDry, a backdoor the U.S. government has attributed to the North Korean government. Okay, so here's a good learning opportunity here. Don't install unsigned applications. Now, it sounds like that person said they didn't really know what that they were actually installing it. The fact that it was unsigned, the operating system should have let them know. But I would go as far as to say never install unsigned or unverified tools. And on the flip side, work with your organization to get an app central of some kind so they can have repositories of apps that are really verified and are able to be installed and approved. Do what you can to limit the surface for attackers who are out to make a mess of your network.
Well, you know, sometimes a single story brings together a lot of important threads in the industry. This week we have, courtesy of Uber, teenage hackers, compromised VPN, social engineering, and the continuing saga of Joe Sullivan, Uber's former head of security. Let's see if we can sort all this out. On Thursday, Uber took its systems down after it discovered that its internal systems had been compromised. The attacker was able to social engineer their way into an employee's VPN account before pivoting deeper into the network. The attacker, reported to be a teenager, claimed to have troves of emails, data exfiltrated from Uber's Google Cloud storage, and Uber's proprietary source code, proof of which was sent to some researchers and media outlets, including the New York Times. According to researchers who saw this proof, it appears that the attacker was able to gain total systems access to Uber's internals. To rub cyber salt in the wound, the attacker apparently sent a system-wide Slack message telling everyone in the company that they had been breached. Researchers say that the attacker used an MFA fatigue attack to gain access. In this case, the attacker found a valid username and password for Uber's VPN, but needed a text-based MFA one-time code to get into the account. So, he bombed the Uber employee with MFA push notifications for more than an hour before finally contacting the target via WhatsApp, where he posed as Uber IT staff. If the person wanted the irritation to stop, they said, they just needed to accept the MFA request. The victim finally relented and complied. Once in, the attacker found a PowerShell script containing hard-coded credentials for a psychotic privileged access management admin account, which gave them plentiful, bountiful, marvelous tools to unlock other internal systems like, well, Slack. At this point, the attacker seems like a young hacktivist or hacker polishing credentials, since no ransomware or extortion attempt has been found, but there were additional Slack messages extolling the company to do things like pay its drivers more. If this remains true, then Uber should count itself lucky and work on new ways to deal with the successful intrusions that now seem, well, inevitable for the rideshare giant.
Well, my story has it brings back some memories for me. This one comes from Dark Reading, and the White House is making some interesting recommendations. They want us to do, they want federal agencies to do S-bombs. Now, what's an S-bomb? Okay, a software bill of materials. So let's read a little bit of this and try and put this in perspective. The Biden White House has released a new cybersecurity executive order outlining guidelines for software supply chain security, including the suggestion that federal agency CIOs start requiring documentation of secure development and the software bill of materials. In a memo sent to the heads of executive departments and agencies, the White House Office of Management and Budget outlines supply chain cybersecurity best practices established by the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which would recommend a full software inventory assessment, collecting statements from each outside software vendor that its products conform to the NIST supply chain security framework, and a requirement for S-bombs when purchasing new software. Quote, as agencies develop requirements that include the use of new software, they must request confirmation that the software producer utilizes secure software development practices, the OMB memo states. This could be accomplished through specification of these requirements in the request for proposal or other solicitation documents. But regardless of how the agency ensures compliance, the agency must ensure that the company implements and attests to the use of secure software development practices consistent with the NIST guideline throughout the software development cycle. Okay, this is something that actually does exist already in certain portions of the U.S. federal government. When I was doing classified work, there was already such requirements, more for the physical security side to make sure that, you know, no spies had slipped something in. What this is doing is it's pushing it further to the edges of the U.S. federal government so that when people are going to get custom systems built, they're going to hold them to some standards to make sure that, you know, someone hasn't slipped something in. And this is mostly targeted by the folks that are doing a lot of open source development using open source modules, and to try and avoid a lot of the things that we've been talking about malware hiding in dependencies.
Innovation at the warehouse level is something Amazon continues to pursue to increase their efficiency and decrease their costs. Now, according to the Wall Street Journal, they have made another move in this space, acquiring Belgian company Coostermans that designs technology to manage the flow of robots through their warehouse. Now, to me, this will take Amazon's automation to the next level. Now, personally, I've worked at a large brewery as an engineer in the past where they've had robot automation to load beer pallets on trucks, and it does make things cleaner, quieter, and more efficient. Although Coostermans is a small organization of only 200 employees, it's been a manufacturing for machinery for many years, and most of it recently established itself as an engineering and automation company. Now, it sounds like Amazon is getting a super rich set of experience here in this space as part of the acquisition. Now, this might be the bump they actually need to take them to the next level compared to competitors. Now, there's a $5 trillion retail market ready for the taking here, and Walmart and Amazon want a big piece of it. And Amazon plans to have robotics work alongside warehouse employees to help increase safety, quote, safety, and reduce waste. Now, I read between the lines a little bit here, and it really means potentially less workers, less injuries, and better efficiency. They kind of have to say what they said, and otherwise warehouse workers might start fearing their jobs. But that's because we've seen this happen before with Amazon's Kiva acquisition, where they actually deployed more than 520,000 robots in their warehouses, actually reducing some of their staff. Now, since Amazon expanded its logistics network over the last 2 years, this might just be the efficiency bump they need to curb high operating costs as demand has reduced and people go back to their normal lives. If nothing else, maybe this means that you might just get your packages faster from Amazon, if that could be possible. Or maybe it will even mean they can reduce their costs so Prime can be cheaper. Please. Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, the bites. But before we get to the bites, we have to thank a really great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's userway.org. Now, every website, without exception, needs to be accessible. UserWay's incredible AI-powered solution tirelessly enforces the hundreds of WCAG guidelines out there. In fact, in a matter of seconds, UserWay AI can achieve more than what an entire team of developers can in months. At first, it actually may seem overwhelming to make your website accessible, but UserWay solutions make it simple, easy, and cost-effective. You can even use their free scanning tool to see if your website is ADA compliant. Now, if you have an enterprise-level website with thousands of pages, UserWay offers a managed solution where their team can handle everything for you. UserWay's AI and machine learning solutions power accessibility for over a million websites trusted by Coca-Cola, Disney, eBay, FedEx, and many more leading brands out there. Now, UserWay is making its best-in-class enterprise-level accessibility tools available to small and medium-sized businesses as well. You can get started today for as little as $49 a month on UserWay's monthly plan. And your company can be ADA compliant, reach more customers, and build more loyalty. And remember, you get 30% off. There are a billion people in the world with disabilities. That's roughly 13% of the population that you don't want to lose as potential customers because you're not compliant. Think about it. By not being compliant, fines and revenue loss will probably cost you more. UserWay is the leading accessibility solution in the market today with a market share of 61%, the biggest in the world. For years, UserWay has been on the cutting edge, creating innovative accessibility technologies that push the envelope of what's possible with AI, machine learning, and computer vision. UserWay's AI automatically fixes violations at the code level for you. Listen to just some of the things it can do for you. It can auto-generate image alts. It writes image descriptions for you, remediates complex nav menus, and ensures that all pop-ups are accessible, fixes vague link violations, and fixes any broken links, which is great, ensures your website makes use of accessible colors while remaining true to your brand. And UserWay gives you a detailed report of all violations that were fixed on your website. UserWay is a platform agnostic and it integrates seamlessly with WordPress, Shopify, Wix, Sitecore, SharePoint, and a lot more. Let UserWay help your business meet its compliance goals and improve the experience for your users. The voice of Siri, Susan Bennett, has a message about UserWay.
Hi, I'm Susan Bennett, the original voice of Siri. You won't hear me say something like this too often. I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're looking for. But every day, that's what the internet is like for millions of people with disabilities. UserWay fixes all of that with just one line of code.
UserWay can make any website fully accessible and ADA compliant. With UserWay, everyone who visits your site can browse seamlessly and customize it to fit their needs. It's also a perfect way to showcase your brand's commitment to millions of people with disabilities. Go to userway.org/twit and get 30% off UserWay's AI-powered accessibility solution. Book a short call and get their accessibility guide. UserWay, making the internet accessible for everyone. Visit userway.org/twit today. And we thank UserWay for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's time for the bites. We have a good one today. We've talked a lot about different paths and different parts of the industry that are actually vulnerable to cyber attacks, but we've really never talked about the actual shipping business, the shipping container business. Curtis, what's going on there?
Well, you know, one of the things that most of us tend not to think about are the shipping methods by which we get, well, pretty much everything that isn't produced in our neighborhood. That includes trucking, and for most things that come from overseas, shipping. Most common way for shipping bulk goods, and by bulk I don't mean things like wheat and cement, but you know, shoes and electronics and such, are through containers. These are the standardized shipping containers that fill ships around the world and go from ships to trains to trucks once they're on land. We know from earlier in the coronavirus pandemic just how fragile and how necessary these supply chains are. During the first 11 months of 2021, For example, the value of U.S. international freight increased by more than 22% compared to the same 11 months in 2020. Of course, those 11 months in 2020 included the beginning of the pandemic. Now, one of the interesting things about shipping is how many players there are. In other words, how many ships there are out there, how many ports there are, how many individuals are involved in the industry around those ports and those ships, and in many cases, just how archaic the technology used is. For example, a couple of years ago when I was still at Dark Reading, I did an article on a fraud technique by which basically someone would fax or email an agent at a shipping company and give them a message like this: I'm Captain so-and-so of our ship, whatever its name is. I'm in the following port, and they're not letting me clear customs without paying duties. The duties are $20, $30, $40, $50,000. Please do a wire transfer today of that amount of money to the following account. This was raking in hundreds of thousands of dollars around the world because this was not an unusual occurrence. Apparently, captains send in messages saying, hey, I need a bundle of money to clear customs pretty much every day. And relatively low-level people in the offices of the shipping companies have the authority to make those payments because they have to clear customs and get the ship moving again. Well, as we've moved on, there are more and more computer systems on these ships. And the risk to those systems is expected to increase. One indicator of this came at DEF CON. There's a Hack the Sea competition where people look at the various techniques for both hacking into and protecting the various systems used in the maritime industry. Well, what sort of things are they fighting when they're trying to keep the system safe? In some cases, there are things that we're used to: obsolete and unsupported operating systems. I suspect we'd be stunned by just how many systems on these ships are still running things like Windows 95, unpatched system software, outdated or non-existent antivirus and anti-malware software, unsecured shipboard networks, and critical infrastructure that will connect over long periods of time to the shore side. What do I mean? Well, when the ships dock, they will connect many things for power and other systems to the dock, to shoreside. And the security coming from those systems can be minimal, especially in various small ports around the world. Now, according to Naval Dome, which is a cyber security firm specializing in the maritime industry, cyber attacks on maritime transport increased by 400% in 2020. Last year, they have records available. So what are we seeing? There have been ransomware attacks on things like the port of Rotterdam in 2017, the port of Shahid Raji in Iran in May 2020, and the port of Kennewick, Washington in November of 2020. Now, in each of these cases, the cyber attack on the port meant that shipping was stopped because the systems required to control the movement of ships was down. It is a seriously vulnerable system, a seriously critical system. And the question is, what can we do about it? And at least one of our co-hosts, Brian Chi, has some experience on this because he's worked around research vessels. Brian, when I ask you, I know that you tried to put a more modern network in place on a ship and ran into issues, the sort of things that just wouldn't crop up if we were dealing with the standard, say, office building.
Yeah, reality is part of the problem. I'm not going to say all of the problem, but part of the problem is the American Bureau of Shipping, which controls any U.S. flagged and partial and also American built ships. So when I was doing quite a bit of work with the research community, we were trying to do something logical. And what we wanted to do is the control systems on a particular research vessel was still connected up with thick Ethernet. It was only 10 meg per second Ethernet. And it was some of the cables were run right by very high powered power cables that runs the DC motors. The research vessel happens to be a diesel electric. So there are some very large power cables and they were inducting all kinds of noise onto the Ethernet and causing it to crash. I thought, well, you know, me and the rest of the IT guys goes, well, this is easy to fix. Let's go and replace the thick Ethernet. In fact, we actually added to it. We didn't even take the thick Ethernet out lest part of the inspection process required that it be there. We just thought, okay, let's just go and add some regular old fiber optics, go to a fiber optic transceiver and plug it into the DIX connector, D-I-X, Digital Intel Xerox, for thick Ethernet, so that we could go and not have to worry about inductance problems. It took over a year to get approval, and even then, we had to be willing to sign some documents saying we were going to take responsibility for this. I didn't even bother. We were trying to go and upgrade the actual control systems that go into the PLCs because these old PLCs were so old that if you actually sent more than a half a dozen pings in a row, the PLC itself would crash. So there's a lot of problems with that. And the other problem is research vessels are unusual in that they typically do have IT specialists on board. But a lot of vessels like container ships, oil tankers, and so forth, don't. So that means if a crew member brings a laptop on board and wants to be able to go and exchange email, one is considered a benefit, so they get hooked up. But what happens is that we get lots of malware-infected laptops plugging into the shipboard network, and problems ensue. The solution that I keep getting told by different people is, oh, we don't have to worry about that. The navigation and control network is physically separated from the rest of the ship. Okay, we all know how well air gaps work. There's even some hacks that go back and forth because they're piggybacking on things like USB sticks. Lots of interesting problems. So this is something I'm sending out to the maritime industry. Y'all got some interesting problems that we've known how to solve for quite a few years, and it does not cost a ton of money. This is something that is easy to do, relatively easy, and at least will reduce your attack surface to the point of, you know, maybe just maybe, you know, staving off that ransomware attack that has probably got you in their sights. You need to learn from the people that have already bled all over the place at when they got hit by cyber attacks. Because, sorry, folks, you guys do have a target on your back. And because you're just plugging into foreign networks that may or may not even have firewalls in place, you've got some problems coming up in front of you.
Well, you know, those problems are going to be there in the hardware and the software. And I want to ask Lou, from what you've seen, and as we're talking about these maritime systems, do you hear anything or are you aware of anything in those systems that requires them to use unique development methods or unique tools? Or is this just a case of applying the same sort of best practices we use in landside applications to the maritime environment?
I don't think it's definitely different. I think what I'm seeing is the market shift is market. In fact, Brian brought it out. He said these are air gapped in some sense, and the fact that they don't necessarily have security professionals on board. So, like when you're trying to, you know, install things or even you get things up and running, you can't have lengthy approval processes or need to upgrade the systems on the fly. You need to be able to have tools to be able to do that because people on the ship are not going to know how to do that. And so there's actually companies out there. There's an Israeli cybersecurity company called Naval Dome that actually has systems in place where you can install them in an air-gapped environment like a ship, even on old legacy hardware or whatnot. And it's almost like endpoint security, but it allows you to do things without necessarily a lengthy approval process or the right security professionals. It only lets applications and software run, which is similar to some endpoint security on land. But the fact is it reduces kind of the impedance that goes through, you know, the process. And I think that's the major difference when it comes to ships is the fact that you got these large vessels that don't necessarily even have, you know, remote capability and they need to be able to secure themselves in some way. So I'd say they probably use some practices similarly, but they have very specialized cases.
And, you know, those specialized cases, I think, are not likely to go away because there are so many ports that many of these ships go into that are in less developed nations or developing nations. Some of them are vital links into areas of political and sectarian strife. So you get war. It's a complex system, but it's one that is critical for us to figure out and get as right as possible. This is one is going to be interesting to watch because the requirement for safe transit of vast quantities of goods isn't going away anytime soon. And unless we just enjoy things like shortages and hyperinflation, it's worth taking care of this critical length in the supply chain. Well, that's it for this bite. Lou, going to turn it back over to you for what comes next.
Thank you, Kurt. Well, next up, we have our guest. Excited for that. But before we get to our guest, we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Melissa. Melissa is a leading provider of global data quality and address management solutions. Did you know poor data quality can cost organizations an average of $15 million each year? Now, if you're a small to medium-sized business, we know you need every last cent. Now, the longer poor quality data stays in your system, the more losses you can accumulate. Now, Melissa will never cost you more than you are going to save. To ensure your business is successful, your customer information needs to be accurate, as high quality data will save you money. Now, there's another side to inaccurate data: customer service. If you address someone with the wrong name or verify the wrong address when dealing with an already frustrated customer, things go from bad to worse. Check out Melissa's cloud-based data cleansing and enrichment tool. It's easy to use. Step one, upload your file with either Excel or CSV in that first tab, or copy and paste your data into the second tab. Step two, select a data quality service and click next. Step three, map the input fields. Step four, select output fields and data to append. And step five, process your list. Really easy. Melissa's data quality suite will help eliminate clutter and duplicates, reducing postage and mailing costs. You also get batch addressing cleansing. You'll process an entire address list for accuracy and completeness. You'll even get name verification, parse and standardize first and last names for personalization. Profiling is there as well. Analyze your data to improve its quality over time. And email verification removes up to 95% of bad email addresses from your database. Melissa's flexible deployment options offer different platforms to suit any preference, business size, or budget. Melissa also has their new Lookups app. It's on iOS and Google to search addresses, verify social security numbers, access detailed property data, and more just at your fingertips. And Melissa continually undergoes independent security audits to reinforce its commitment to data security, privacy, and compliance requirements. They are SOC 2, HIPAA, and GDPR compliant. Melissa's data quality suite and clean suite speaks for itself, but it was once again named a leader by G2. Melissa's experienced, independent, and has 37 years of data quality expertise, which explains why more than 10,000 businesses know them as the address experts. And if you sign up for service level agreement, you'll get 24/7 world-renowned support from their global support center. Make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. That's melissa.com/twit. And we thank Melissa for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's my favorite part of the show. We actually get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on the Twiat Riot. And today we have Brian Ballard. He's CEO and co-founder of Upskill and SVP of Solutions at TeamViewer. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thank you. It's great to be on. Excited to talk with you guys today.
Now, we have a lot of interesting things to talk about because obviously Upskill is doing some pretty neat things in the market. But our audience is all over the spectrum when it comes to experience, and they love to hear people's journeys through tech. Can you take us through a journey through tech and what brought you to Upskill?
Sure. And my background, actually listening to you guys earlier, was a lot of fun because I started actually in information security, supporting the DoD, which is where a lot of tech gets started. So I fell in love with the idea of augmented reality to help, whether it be soldiers or people in the enterprise, along that journey. Took a risk, jumped out of the DoD space to try and start a company with a couple guys that I had worked with. And we launched a company that became Upskill to try and solve the enterprise and DoD gap between the information processes in the background and bring it into your field of view using augmented reality and smart glasses. So that's what got me into that space. I must say the technology journey is just as exciting as the entrepreneurial journey, and that led to where I am today, which is leading solution delivery at TeamViewer, where we're bringing this augmented reality capability to a much broader audience now.
All right. Obviously, we don't want to bury the lead. What we're talking about wearable technology, I think basically AI or augmented reality. What is the extent of wearables today? What are you seeing in the market?
Well, you've got in the wearable space, I mean, like people will talk about things like, you know, you've got smartwatches and yes, that's obviously wearable. But when it's coming to the connected workforce, it's really about smart glasses. So a lot of people think VR, you know, this, you know, my VR headset that, you know, I use and like I'll experience interesting things or I'll show my kids like, you know, here's a destination you could go one day. But when it comes to smart glasses and wearables, think Google Glass, but think for the enterprise. You know, examples are things like this, where I'm wearing a Vuzix set of glasses that is showing me information in my field of view. And unlike that VR headset, I'm heads up, I'm hands free, I'm engaged with my job. Also, hyper rugged systems like the RealWear Navigator 500. So it's an evolution of what we all saw Google preview years ago with the launch of Google Glass, and even the Glass source story arc went into the enterprise space. It's all about how do you connect those people at the front of work, that frontline workforce, to the other people, experts, to system processes and information, so they're able to do their job more effectively. It's a really, really powerful tool in the enterprise right now.
It sounds like obviously that is one of the biggest parts of the market. In fact, I was reading that the augmented reality market, its size was around $26 billion in 2021, but it's supposed to expand 41% in the next roughly 8 to 10 years. That's huge. That's a huge market. So
some of that's probably also counting like the business side where they're using augmented reality in advertising. So you're doing your, think of it as your Snapchat filters, like you're showcasing it's like a new experience, like makeup, which is an incredible, I think, tool to tell a story and relate to your customer base. But it's also about this production side. You talked about how do you innovate in the warehouse? Like, yeah, you could put robots in and automate a lot of tasks away, or you can augment your workforce by bringing in new information, adding in AI inferences in right where that person's doing work. It sort of gives them superpowers. It gives them an ability to be a more, I think, competitive component of that industrial workforce. So that's an area where you see a lot of this, and that's where a lot of the acceleration is happening in the market today. It's going from those early experiments where people were curious about the technology towards really driving an outcome. And you talked about like that huge growth market. When we talk to our customer base, and there's a lot of statistics out there right now, like we have customers where something along the lines of 86% of our customer base is able to onboard their employees faster because of the immersion level that comes from augmented reality being there while they're learning, rather than you're trying to memorize a video you saw and then bring that into the workspace.
So let's talk a little bit about cost, because I know that a lot of organizations, I've seen organizations use AI, AR, or this type of thing to help, for instance, service or field service scenarios. Yep. To help train people on the jobs. And they're not that, you know, expense wise, they can, you know, do 5 or 6 pairs for like 10 people or something like that. What are we seeing costs come down? Are they being more affordable? Are they being more helping organizations utilize them more?
Yes. Yeah. So the costs have come down in a couple different areas. So if you think about what smart glasses are, they're a cell phone in a different shape for the most part. They're by large majority, they're an Android device as opposed to a touch screen. They have a touchpad as opposed to, you know, your retina displays, it is a display in front of your retina. So it's a lot of the same technology. It's slight variations in the chipset. So you might have a Qualcomm chip that's slightly optimized for that form factor. So you're getting the economies of scale. Like when I started Upscale 12 years ago, you didn't have that. So this is why it started in the military space, where there's a huge investment into the industrial base. Now it's benefiting from economies of scale. That's a piece of the equation. The other piece of it is the software and tools that you use to develop that, you know, that killer app for the industry. And that's where software like Frontline, which is what TeamViewer makes, helps our customers develop those applications faster. Or if we've already developed them, it's a turnkey out of the box solution. So the cost of implementation drops like a rock when you don't have to develop everything from the ground up to understand how to take advantage of these new display types. How do you take advantage of a new user experience paradigm altogether? Voice is now a very powerful input. Computer vision is a powerful input. So those developmental costs have dropped considerably, and it makes it very accessible for industries, not just the enterprise level, but at the mid-market level as well.
You mentioned Frontline, TeamViewer's service there. And then I also think assisted AR. What's the kind of combination? What's Upscale bring to the table? What's kind of combining those efforts together, and what's coming out of that?
Yeah, so we talked about, you named two of our products. So TeamViewer Frontline is now a combination of multiple acquisitions that TeamViewer has done to really elevate themselves to market leadership position. So you have Upscale's Skylight software, Ubimax's Frontline software, and Viscopic Spatial software are now together in one powerful suite that carries the Frontline moniker. And this is about, how do we deliver real-time remote access? So you said assist AR. That's an example where we can use AR to connect a remote expert from one location right to the field of view, whether you're on a mobile device or smart glasses, to somebody in the front line. We have our picking solutions, XPick, which are all about logistics and warehouse augmentation of the workforce to drive faster picking, higher quality and accuracy, and really help with onboarding and training, bringing like new tech to the workforce. Spatial is our product that deals with like very rich 3D models. So how do we take, like, if you think about, I think Brian, you've got a background in 3D as well. A lot of businesses spend a lot of time and money creating these really powerful 3D models, and then they take screenshots of them and put them onto paper and print it out. what happens when you can bridge that digital divide and bring the design technology, that 3D immersion, right to the workforce. And that's one of the things our frontline toolset does. So it's really about how do we solve these problems? And we think about four major problems at the workforce: make, move, maintain. So manufacturing, maintenance and logistics, operations, and then this remote assist layer, which we call assist AR, to the workforce.
There's kind of like another layer that I see in this. Obviously, there's the AI software, the services, but there's like a lot of data coming from these devices. Is there another layer in there around analytics that helps organizations really understand, okay, this was the efficiency of this service? Like, for instance, we tried to show a field service person how to go and correct something, and this is how successful that was, or how clear it was, or that kind of thing. Is there analytics built around that as well?
There are, yeah. We have a suite called AI Studio that enables our technology to help the person in the field make an inference based on what they're seeing. So an example of this, let's say you're in the automotive space and you're servicing cars. If a car comes in and you have to diagnose something, you might look at it and go, okay, I see a leak here. But what if we have seen that leak on a bunch of different cars? And what we can use is the AI training models to determine whether or not this is recognizable as a warranty issue, as opposed to the technician going, well, I think it's a leak here, but not aware of the body of knowledge and maybe every other technician across a nationwide dealer network that may have seen these things. So this is where, the person, when we used to think of this in the DoD space, is the Mark I eyeball was the best sensor in the world. And it's a powerful sensor, that first person point of view. But when you enrich it with a computer aided artificial intelligence model, it becomes extremely powerful, and you can make decisions or give the person at the field clues that they can use to inform their decision making process with a much richer data set. So it's you're seeing this digital transformation come in a lot of different flavors, but it's all around the person. And going back to, again, we're giving that person, the digital equivalent of superpowers.
Right. My co-hosts are chomping at the bit here, so I definitely want to get to them. But before we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's IRL, an original podcast from Mozilla. Now, IRL is a show for people who build AI and people who develop tech policies. Hosted by Bridget Todd, the season of IRL looks at AI in real life. Now, who can AI help? Who can it harm? And the show features fascinating conversations with people who are working to build more trustworthy AI. Now, for example, there's an episode about how our world is mapped with AI. Data that's missing from those maps tells us much of a story as the maps themselves. Now, you hear all about the people who are working to fill in those gaps and take control of the data. Now, there's another episode about gig workers who depend on apps for their livelihood. It looks at how they're pushing back against algorithms that control how much they get paid and seeking new ways to gain power over data to create better working conditions. For political junkies, there are episodes about the role that AI plays when it comes to the spread of misinformation and hate speech around elections, a huge concern for democracies around the world. And I really liked season 4, episode 1, checking out online shopping. They talk about the hidden costs of shopping online and off and what you're actually giving up to do so. Amanda Brown, a data scientist from Amazon, is on the show and talks about what happens when you make an online purchase. It just may shock you. Super compelling episode. Definitely check that one out. Search for IRL in your podcast player. We'll also include a link in the show notes. And we'd like to thank IRL for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we'll be talking with Brian Ballard, TeamViewer, and also co-founder of Upskill. But I want to bring my co-host back in because, like you said, Brian's got a lot of experience in 3D modeling here. I'm sure that he's got some questions, Brian.
Actually, I wanted to put a little bit of perspective for our viewers. The first time I actually saw a real-life application of augmented reality was actually with Boeing. And they were using custom-built headsets, and it was specifically developed for building wire harnesses. Now, I don't know if you've recognized it, wire harnesses are a very, very expensive piece of an aircraft. And if you have too short a wire, that means you actually have to unbraid everything and put it back. Now, the issue that Boeing had was the development on this and the equipment was astronomically expensive. What my question is, our friends at TeamViewer, and obviously now Upskill, is now starting to push AR into the tech support world. Now, we've had horror stories about grannies saying, the cup holder on my PC is broken. Wouldn't it be great if we could have, you know, AR to help granny with her PC? What are the steps that someone would need to do to be able to go and do this? You know, 3D modeling is expensive, but what are the steps a company would need to do to be able to go and help granny out on remote tech support?
That's you hit on a lot of thoughts. I'm super passionate about, the Boeing story is fantastic. One of the biggest and earliest successes we had proving this was viable was picking up the thread that Boeing started trying to develop their own solution for wiring harness manufacturer. And we built one for them using smart glasses, 20 years after that example that, or maybe, yeah, 20, almost 25 years after the example you brought up. So it's a use case that's endured, and it's inexpensive, not just in aircraft, in cars, in refrigerators. Wiring harnesses are extremely complex and very, very manual. But to your point, there's a, once the capability is accessible, it can be done for nearly any stakeholder. So, we talk about how has this evolved in TeamViewer's portfolio. TeamViewer's entire existence started around the idea of remote desktop support. So Granny gets stuck. She calls me. I can log into her computer and help her diagnose the issue from afar. But that's desktop screen sharing. This is now taking a jump where you can go to your app store of choice, download Assist AR, and share your help me out code with either the company that you bought something from, or your grandson or granddaughter, if you want to use that example, and they can see what you're seeing through your device. They can sketch on it, draw on it, and it's using the technology in these mobile devices to help make that debugging session or that help session more helpful. So could be something like drawing an arrow on, the back of your computer. Say, hey, mom, plug this in here, and now you'll be able to stream the video you want. That barrier of entry has dropped to almost zero. It is so easy to do that now.
Okay, well, that's awesome. But I did a lot of work on ships. I did a lot of work in air-gapped environments, under mountains and so forth. Can these models, are we at the point where we can load these models into that air-gapped environment or take it on a ship or whatever? Tell me about what the process is.
Yeah, so the thing you lose in an air-gapped environment is the real-time connection. So if it's to have me help somebody remotely live in your air-gapped, that obviously fails. So this goes back to what we were talking about before. When you have these computer vision-aided models, that can take over a lot of the, manual walking somebody through the process. Example of this is we do a lot of work with automotive vendors, and we can load models of parts of their car in and push those down to the device as a pre-existing training model. So I don't need a real-time connection to the cloud. I can take that device with me, open it up, turn the application on, and have it automatically recognize objects that it's already been trained to do. And those models are very, very lightweight. It's the training data that is heavy. And we make that so that any layman can upload photos and training models and push those down to the device. So it's one of those things where in the right environment, you want to make sure that even if it's like an unideal scenario because of Wi-Fi degradation or maybe access to a certain type of device, these systems can still run. They can still help the person out. They can infer from the environment or AI models they've seen before how to solve the problem for a person. So this is really, I think, you're starting to see this cutting edge technology go from being the sci-fi ideas that we read about ages ago to something you can really use today.
Okay, so let's ask a little bit of crystal ball. What's next? What can you tell us about? What are the next steps for AR and VR?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say, here's the date where I'm going to put $10 on the table. It says, Meta or Apple or Google are going to come out with a consumer version. I think we'll let the pundits think about those. for us and where we care about really, which is helping, you know, enterprises, their employees, their customers, it's really going to be the enrichment of the and accuracy of the software. So the 3D model based interactions are going to feel almost natural. The ability to just ask for information and it appear when you need it, that is going to feel almost natural. That, and if you think about that going from like maybe your home speaker device that's a smart speaker to something that's with you and omnipresent, but not just telling you weather and setting timers, but really how to help you do something or fix something, that's really, if you think about the amount of technology that's had to come together and the amount of innovation to meet at this point in time and make that jump, it's massive. And it's going to be game changing for the people that actually get helped by that every day. So for me, that's what I'm excited about, that empowerment of people. And we're close and we're getting close to landing that. I think we made the jump a while ago.
Well, you know, we've been talking about a number of applications that are, if not industrial, sort of industrial adjacent. We talk about, you know, aircraft maintenance and things like that. The first time I ever used a AR or VR headset was at an SAP conference. And I actually had a chance to walk through some incredibly complex data sets and look at them in three dimensions. Mm-hmm. You know, do you think that we are getting close to the point where AR is going to make its case for being useful in some of these white collar jobs, the analytical jobs and things like that, rather than on a shop floor?
Yeah. And I think about these as kind of like command and control and collaboration scenarios. So if I am trying to plan out how I might want to lay out a concert venue, to be able to work with the different compatriots, maybe different skill set folks like the sound and lighting crews, lay this out on a conference table and we're all visualizing it together and making adjustments. That is coming. The mixed reality devices that are out right now are good enough to do that job. So you're looking at your HoloLenses, your Magic Leap 2s. That's really where those become really powerful tool sets to have this immersive multi-dimensional experience. And the thing that's kind of unlocked this is the LiDAR based and image based sensing, so that you and I and maybe somebody else or multiple people can share that same experience and walk around a virtual object together, touch, you know, a digital representation of something and adjust it. If you haven't done one of those demos recently, I highly recommend getting your hands on a HoloLens or a Magic Leap and really trying it. It is incredible how far it's come and how real it feels.
You mentioned a term there, and before we get away, I think it would be useful to talk about defining the terms. We've used virtual reality, augmented reality, and mixed reality.
Yep.
Can you talk just real briefly about the differences in those three terms and where each might best be used?
Absolutely. So thank you for also pausing to do that, because the terms have been rolled around a lot, sort of like and intermixed quite a bit. The spectrum, I'll divide into half. First of all, you have augmented reality and you have virtual reality. So again, virtual reality is I put on a set of glasses. I cannot see you. I can't see the world around me. Pardon my googly eyes for the effect for the kids. In augmented reality, I can see the real world and I'm bringing information into it, as opposed to replacing the world with a virtual representation. Inside AR, and my experience and expertise really ends right at the VR wall. My work life is dedicated to the AR side. Inside the AR, there's a lot of different terms that you might hear, but the two big ones are assisted reality and mixed reality, kind of under that AR umbrella. And depending on who you talk to, that we might use them slightly differently, but they are the related family. in mixed reality, this is the concept where the lenses that I'm looking through that are projecting the digital information sit between me and the content of the world I'm looking at. So if I'm like, let's take the yellow line of scrimmage example from any football game you might watch. If you were actually in the stands looking through, say, a HoloLens 2, and that yellow line is drawn, you see the football field, but that yellow line will look like it's exactly where it belongs in a very convincing manner. That's mixed reality. It has an understanding of the exact placement of that digital content that is being projected on top of the real world. And just to define that a little bit, it's not actually being projected on the world. It's being projected into your eye that makes it look like it's in the real world. Assisted reality, or what a lot of folks might think of as like augmented reality light. This is your Google Glass, your monocular device that sits generally just outside of your line of sight, and it's a glanceable display. And we think of this like glancing up at your rearview mirror. There's content there that's important to what you're dealing with, but you're not looking through it. You look at it, you get referenceable information, kind of like a heads-up display in your car is another analogy, but your focus can still be on the real world. So unlike VR, it's not being blocked out of the real world. I can still see the world I'm interacting with, but I'm bringing information that's contextually relevant into that experience. It may or may not be see-through, but it does not have a lock into the physical space. So that's a quick way of defining it.
It's really interesting technology. I guess we could probably talk about it a lot more, but unfortunately, time flies when you're having fun. The show went really fast. Brian, thank you so much for being here. We're running a little low on time, but we do want to give you a chance maybe to tell the folks at home where they can learn more about TeamViewer and some of the solutions out there.
Yeah, to make it the easiest place to find it, TeamViewer.com is where you can go to learn more about this. Particularly if you look under the frontline section, you can learn more about how our products are actually benefiting different industries from automotive to oil and gas, logistics. And if you're in one of those industries and want to know how it can help your job, you can actually see what this looks like to the people who are doing the work. And maybe you can introduce this to your team as a way to make your work life better. Lots of great solutions there. And I think a wealth of information if you want to learn more.
Well, folks, you've done it again. You sat through another hour of the Best Dang Enterprise and IT podcast in the universe. So definitely tune your podcatcher to Twyatt. We want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to my co-host, starting with our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, what's going on for you in the coming weeks? Where can people find you?
Well, the good news is that everything I'm going to be doing, I'm going to be doing pretty close to home. I don't have any travel planned for the next few weeks, so that's good. A lot of writing coming up. As I said, I think that if people will do me the honor of following me on Twitter at KG4GWA, I promise I will let you know there anytime I have something going live on LinkedIn, on Dark Reading, or on our very own Omdia channel. A lot of good stuff happening, and would love to hear from members of the Twyatt Riot about what they're interested in. What are your questions when it comes to enterprise security management? We'll do what we can to get those answered at some point in the very near future.
Thanks, Curtis. Good seeing you. Well, folks, we have to also thank our very own Mr. Brian Chi. Chibert, what's going on for you in the coming week? Where can people find you?
I'm going to play hooky. I'm actually heading to Cape Canaveral, and we're going to enjoy our timeshare week. Actually, it was a free timeshare week, which makes it taste especially good. But I'm going to be tweeting all kinds of pictures. I'm going to take pictures while I'm at Cape Canaveral and have a lot of fun. But I'm going to be also fielding all kinds of questions because people like asking us questions about episodes, future episodes, technology we've been tinkering with, and so forth. My Twitter address is ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab, which is left over from my days at the University of Hawaii when I was running a testing lab. And that's actually where Kurt and I started doing all kinds of work. And you're also welcome to throw me email. My email is Chiebert, spelled C-H-E-E BERT at twit.tv. But you're also welcome to throw email at twit@twit.tv, which will hit all the hosts. We'd love to hear from you and so forth. And, you know, chat room, let's go and see what kind of really cool show titles we can have.
Thanks, Chievert. Well, we also have to thank you as well. You're the person who drops in each and every week to get your enterprise and IT goodness. We want to make it easy for you to watch and listen and catch up on your enterprise and IT news. So go to our show page right now, twit.tv/Twyatt. There you'll find all the amazing back episodes, the show notes, the host information, guest information. We also have links of the stories that we do during the show. But more importantly, there next to those videos, you'll get those helpful download and subscribe links. Support the show by getting your audio version, your video version of your choice. Listen on any one of your devices because we're on all of your podcast applications. So definitely check that out and subscribe and support the show. Plus, you may have also heard we also have Club Twit as well. That's right. It's a members-only ad-free podcast service with a bonus Twit Plus feed that you can't get anywhere else. It's only $7 a month. There's lots of great things about Club Twit, ad-free, but also they have an exclusive access to a members-only Discord server. They have chat. You can chat with hosts. You can chat with us. You can chat with producers, separate discussion channels, special events going on there, lots of fun stuff. So definitely join Club Twit. Be part of that movement. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit. Now, Club Twit also offers group corporate group plans. That's right. It's a great way to give your team access to our ad-free tech podcast. Plans start with 5 members at a discounted rate of $6 each per month. You can add as many seats as you like there. And this is really a great way for your IT department, your developers, your tech teams to really stay on top of all of our podcasts. And just like regular memberships, it also gets that Twit Discord server access and the Twit Plus bonus feed as well. So definitely join Club Twit, twit.tv/clubtwit. Now, after you subscribe, you can impress your family members, your friends, your coworkers. I just shared it with mine today about giving them the gift of Twyatt. That's right. We talk about a lot of fun tech topics on the show, especially today. And I want to make sure you share with them because they will find it fun and interesting as well. So have them subscribe and be part of the show. But if you've already subscribed and you're available right now, 1:30 p.m. Pacific on Fridays, that's right, we do the show live. Come see how the pizza's made, the behind the scenes, all the fun banter and stuff that we do during and after the show. That's at live.twit.tv. There's all of our streams there. You can check them out and be part of the live stream. But if you're going to watch the show live, you might as well jump into our IRC, our infamous IRC channel at irc.twit.tv. We have a great set of characters in there each and every week. They give us show titles. They give us topics to talk about. They ask questions. They just make me laugh. So just jump in there at irc.twit.tv and be part of that group as well. Now, definitely hit me up because I want to hear your ideas, your thoughts, and your comments. Twitter.com/LouMM. Also hit me up on LinkedIn. Definitely check out there. Direct message me, whatever you want to do. I'd love to hear from you and hear about some of the things that you do in the enterprise, maybe some show ideas as well. Now, if you want to know what I do during my normal work week at Microsoft, just to check out developers.microsoft.com/office. There we post all the amazing ways for you to customize Office, whether it's using our new Office scripts on Excel online, or it's using VBA, the old style, using the new web add-in model. Definitely check all of that out. It's got some amazing stuff you can do with your Office product. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially thanks to Leah and Lisa. They continue to support This Week at Enterprise Tech each and every week, and we couldn't do this show without them. So thank you for all of your support over the years. Definitely also thank all the staff and engineers at Twit. I also want to thank Mr. Brian Chi just one more time because he's not only our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer as well. He does all the show bookings and the plannings for the show, and we really couldn't do this without him. So thank you, Chiebert, for all your support. I want to thank also our editor for today. He makes us look good after the fact. So thank you for all your support and making cutting out all of our mistakes. Plus, I also want to thank our TD, our technical director today. He's the talented Mr. Ant Pruitt. He does an amazing show called Hands-On Photography. I learn something every week in that show. What's going on this week in that show?
Thank you, Mr. Liu. Well, this week we took a look at some listener feedback as they sent some images in and had some questions for me. And I did a little bit of critique and shared some quick tips to help spruce up these beautiful images that they sent to me because they were great, but they could still just be a touch better and really put them over the edge.
Love that. I learned something every week when you touch stuff up. I make mine look so much better. So thank you for all the shows over the years. So appreciate it. Well, until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep quiet.
The world is changing rapidly. So rapidly, in fact, that it's hard to keep up. That's why Micah Sargent and I, Jason Howell, talk with the people making and breaking the tech news on Tech News Weekly every Thursday. They know these stories better than anyone, so why not get them to talk about it in their own words? Subscribe to Tech News Weekly, and you won't miss a beat every Thursday at twit.tv.